I can't remember when it was in the Sunday school years that I realized nobody knows what Jesus looked like. I suppose it must have happened when the face on the little card, the little Jesus card, for 1 year turned out to be almost totally different from the one we had the year before. I do recall that it was a bit of a shock to discover that these were not photographs, but the work of artists who were using their imaginations to guess. As I got older, I realized that not only do we make up faces for Jesus, but we idealize them in terms of our own culture. Not Semitic, which he was, but European, like most of us. Most preaching sentimentalizes Jesus, so we sentimentalize the pictures. Sweetly good, veering toward the feminine, never rough or craggy, or, God forbid, less than beautiful. We just sang a few minutes ago a line that goes, Jesus, the very thought of thee with sweetness fills my breast. I challenge you to find a single verse in the Gospels where Jesus ever provoked that kind of reaction. I find people amazed, afraid, awed, guilty, puzzled, angry enough to kill, inspired enough to risk their own lives, but never flooded with sweetness. We have sanitized and beautified, and in the process, we have made this difficult and demanding personality quite safe. Fairest Lord Jesus, we call him, in a song where the word fair has its old meaning of pretty or lovely. Most beautiful Jesus, we sing, brighter than sunlight, purer than moonlight, lovelier than all the twinkling stars. If that doesn't express our sentimental adoration enough, we paint him with a halo around his head, so that he becomes positively unearthly in his radiant uniqueness. In other words, we do to him exactly what he refused to let other people do when he was on earth. When the fan club threatened to get out of hand, he reminded them that no one is that great and good except God. When he was being tempted to betray his real mission, he said, I don't turn stones into bread. I don't jump off high towers to prove that I am some kind of God. The one thing I feel pretty sure of is that the seminary professor was right years ago, who said, you can forget the idea that Jesus of Nazareth looked like the all-American girl or even Tom Cruise. This was an authentic male born into a poor family where everybody had to work hard just to survive and where no one had access to barber shops and grooming aids and the kind of airbrushed photography that makes Jesus look today like a Hollywood star. This was a man followed, he went on to say, by rough fishermen and angry revolutionaries, a man who walked 20 and 30 miles a day, day after day, a man who could get along in a burning wilderness for over a month without a Coleman lantern or sleeping bag, with no mosquito netting, no first aid kit, no air mattress. He was a carpenter. He used rough, heavy hand tools and a lump of sandstone for a plane. He sat on a dirt floor with a beam or a yoke between his feet. One doubts that by the time he was 30, he was smooth and beautiful in that pretty way we have fancied. Although I would guess that the eyes, maybe the voice, were compelling in ways no artist has ever yet captured. We call him Gentle Jesus, meek and mild. And this mistake is even worse than the one about how he must have looked. He could not have been the hail fellow, well-met personality that churches often put up with in their pulpits, trumpeting forever the power of positive thought, coaxing us to smile, and the world smiles with you. This man was not everybody's friend. This man said to the religious establishment of his day, "You are as deadly and dangerous as a den of rattlesnakes. You are hypocrites who remind me of tombs that have been painted white to disguise the putrefying rottenness on the inside." This is the man who walked into the temple courtyard, called the merchants there that day a bunch of thieves, and drove them out with a whip. This is the man who once turned on a follower, whom the Catholic Church would later revere as the first pope, and called him Satan because of his silly blundering. This is the man who got a message from the most powerful man in the country one day, a man named Herod, and sent back this response: "Go tell that fox that I intend to keep right on doing what I'm doing right now." Fairest Lord Jesus, gentle Jesus, meek and mild, not on your life. This man made enemies so obsessed with getting rid of him that they did it in the most terrible form of death they knew how to inflict. High priests and Roman governors do not waste their time on tender mystics, soft and sweet. This man kept rough company: tough, hard-working fishermen, hated tax agents working for the Roman government, a prostitute, at least one man who belonged to a terrorist faction. Can you imagine these people trooping after fairest Lord Jesus? Do you know that his enemies called him a glutton and a drunkard? An insult undoubtedly exaggerated, but an insult that has no power at all unless it has some truth. Unless Jesus really did eat heartily with common people and drink their homemade wine. This was a real man, bronzed, hard, powerful, a dynamic personality that could walk straight through a mob that wanted to throw him off a cliff and then dared not even touch him. Not because he looked like a divine alien, not because he had a halo floating around his head, but because he was so enormously confident in the power of his integrity. Where do you suppose we got our romanticized version of Jesus? Why this unmasculine man? Did the medieval church, worried about the power of human sexuality, feel that it had to create for us a kind of neutered Jesus so that we could never comfort ourselves with the thought that he might have been truly like us? Aren't you a little anxious already at the thought of where I might be headed? Isn't it a fact